just a quick warning that we're going to be talking about diving and depths and existentialism and life, which can be a pretty daunting topic, but also death and abortion, all sorts of potentially heavy shit, twinning. So if you're not in the right headspace for that kind of thing, maybe just skip this next large chunk of episodes. He's the pain of birth.
Endeavor, a Joanna Newsom podcast. My name is Sam.
My name is Nikki. And welcome to fucking divers, man. I don't know what we're going to do.
We've been texting each other all week like, oh no.
Oh boy.
And why is that? What is up with divers, Nikki?
Well, for me, anytime we have like a title track that we're dealing with, mm-hmm. That's daunting. But for this album, that it's the title track makes me think that there's like this like philosophical, hefty thesis statement being made in this song. And that like to try to contain that within one analysis seems impossible. And it also seems like because Joanna is highlighting it as so important, like it's the name of the freaking album, that like I bet she paid some pretty close attention to what's going on in this song, and it feels like it's just hard to unwrap all of that when Joanna has her mind set on being obscure-ish, then like we're at a loss. I don't know. What do you think?
Yes, all of that. But also that just like this song is so fucking good.
It's so good. Yes. It's
musically absolutely incredible. It is such a bop. It's the kind of song where like, I don't know if any of you guys get this, where like I'm listening to it in my headphones on the train and I just want to look around and be like, are you guys hearing this? Like, do you know what's going on? How are we going to work when this exists? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, it's bonkers. And like, I always forget how intricate it is too. Like, yes. In my head, the thing that sticks out is just like that very catchy harp line that goes like up and down and up and down.
Yes, then, it's like a wave the entire time. That's what I was thinking this morning. And then all of these other things join it, like the piano and then the thumb piano and then the mellotron. Like it's just like this epic wave of sound that builds and falls and builds and falls. And it's incredible.
Incredible. It's so good. And I always forget. Yeah, I just forget about that intricacy. The harp sticks out to me, and then I forget about the layers and layers and layers of instruments, and probably the layers and layers and layers of meaning in the lyrics as well. So it's a lot. But it's so fucking good. This song's so good. Oh,
it's absolutely incredible. Yeah. It's also the seventh song out of 11 tracks on this album.
Oh my God.
Which means that we are again building towards the end. And I say building because I feel like this is a real high point, and then we lose a little energy for Same Old Man. But then the run of You Will Not Take My Heart Alive, A Pin Like Ben, and Time is a Symptom is just like
killer. Like, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. And once killer. We start, there's no stopping.
No, totally. It kills us in a way that parallels the way that our life cycle ends.
It really does.
Covering her eyes.
It really does.
In shame.
But it's true shame. Like those,
oh my God.
Those parallels are true.
I am so not ready for this album to be done, but that's okay because we are inevitably going to spend forever talking about this one song. So
yes.
So I was going to apologize for it, but I actually don't think that we should apologize for it, because it just it demands that kind of attention, I feel like.
And I said to Nikki, it demands the kind of attention where I think we specifically with this song, I mean probably most of them honestly, where we have to sit and talk it out. Like, I can research phosphorescence by myself forever, but I don't think it'll have the same meaning until we like connect our ideas of it.
I totally agree. I texted Sam right before this recording. Like, I'm so excited to talk to you about this because, yeah, different interpretations always come up, and I always leave the recordings with a different understanding of the song than I came to it with, which is so fun.
Yeah.
Another super exciting for me treat about this song is that we don't have one. We don't have two, but we have at least three Blessing All the Birds articles talking about themes going on in Divers. And I am obsessed with the analysis that they provide over there. So I'm super excited to get into that.
I did do some searching for our other favorites, Christopher Laws and Michael Hicks. And unfortunately, they do not cover this one. And to be fair, the articles that were written about this stuff are 5+ years old. Oh my God. How old are they?
Oh my God. I know, man. It's crazy. They're like 8 years old.
Yeah.
Like Divers came out in 2015.
So they're between, I think the Michael Hicks ones are between 2015 and 2018. So like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
That's fair. I'm not expecting Michael Hicks to all of a sudden pick up the cause again, though I would love it.
We're not going to object. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's great that there's three Blessing All the Birds. It's a long song, too. We're hitting
the longest on the album.
7 minutes? Yes. Yeah. Is it 7 minutes, 7 seconds? Is that what's happening? 7 minutes, 7 seconds, which I was also like, does that have?
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the seventh song on the album. Seven is a divine number. Seven. It's like the, I know.
Okay, so that can't be unintentional.
Oh, Lord. I didn't even think about divine numbers.
Fuck. See, we fucked up already.
Okay, so naturally with this song, we have 1,700 preliminary notes to start with. But as Sam and I were saying before we started recording, like, that feels necessary for this song. It feels like this song just deserves like a zoomed out, I don't even know, analysis, like slash primer slash I don't know what. Oh, another tweet about this song. Did you see on Facebook?
I did, but I forgot to watch it.
No, that's totally okay. I have 3 pages of notes on it, so it's totally fine. So,
I think it was Lee's.
It was somebody else on like the shit posting.
Oh, who posted, but then Lee's was like, guys.
Yeah, Lee's tagged us and
thank you,
encouraged us to watch it. Thank you so much, Lee's. This was such a gift. And it's the same guy. We talked about one of his videos for Anecdotes, and it's the same person. He's a composer, and he does he listens to the song live on the video and reacts to it in real time. And he's so fucking insightful and thoughtful and like just clearly knows what he's talking about musically. And then at the very end, he tries to do some lyrical analysis, but he's like, guys, this isn't my forte. And like Joanna Newsom is ridiculous. So like, take
that. That's the perfect compliment to us then, because I feel like I'm just like, the sounds and the waves. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. This is crazy. But like Joanna Newsom's nuts and we don't know what she's doing musically. So yeah, mm-hmm. I thought that the musical stuff that he talked about was so fucking cool. So we're going to get into it.
Awesome.
Should we do that now then, I guess?
Yep. I just wanted to say, and I think this is from Genius or Joanna Newsom Lyrics, but just a fun factoid that the song was first performed in June of 2012 with Philip Glass and Tim Fain in San Francisco. If you were at that show, so cool.
So cool. Let us know if you saw it before it was released. Rachel Parent on Blessing All the Birds talks about seeing the show. I think the song performed, I think, at Pitchfork before it was released, and her initial reactions to it there. Yeah, so fucking cool. So actually, in reference to that, I think that recording, there is an interview done by Exclaim that asked her about an early recording of her performing that song that had been released. And okay, so here's like the line from Exclaim. So naturally, she was annoyed when an early version of the title track from her fourth album, Divers, was recorded live and shared online with the incorrect title, The Diver's Wife. Joanna says, "It's kind of funny how mad it made me." She laughs over the phone from her California home. "It made me so mad that I almost wanted to join Twitter or something to just be like, stop calling it that." The reason that really got my dander up is that it's crucial. It crucially changes the meaning.
Interesting.
Very interesting, I think. So I want to keep in the back of our minds how calling it The Diver's Wife would crucially change the meaning of the song. I have some theories, but I love that. I love the idea of her getting mad and being like, no.
I mean, that makes me want to poke the bear a little bit and just be like, you know, what wrong thing are we going to say that's going to get her to join Twitter and help us out a little bit here?
Help us, Joanna.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And then of this song from that same interview, she says this. "The thing about gender on this record is one of the things I keep coming back to is duality. Not so much binary opposition, but actually duality, twinning. If you look at the lyrics on Divers, there's a lot of twinning and there's a lot of navigation of the border between man and woman, the sea and the shore. And that song, Divers, is partially about gender, but part of the impetus of that song was something I haven't seen anyone touch on yet. I don't think I even want to go into it because eventually someone is going to write something about this song that is going to begin to explore part of what the song meant to me. It's partly linked to gender identity and what it means to be a woman or to be a man in the context of our existence and our time."
Which doesn't, like, a beautiful paragraph. It's beautiful. But doesn't narrow it down at all. Like, that is just, like, it's a little teasing. No one has touched on it yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an invitation. That's what I'll take it as.
Okay.
An invitation.
We're going to try. To touch.
Yeah.
Can't promise you guys anything.
But 25 hours, we will try to touch on part of what it meant to her. All right. Any other thoughts?
Any other thoughts? Okay. I also just wanted to touch on where we ended up last time, which is a great note to have, but I don't really remember where we were. My note is, we're backwards in time, baby. Question okay. mark. So we thought we were heading backwards.
Yeah, I think that was because, if I'm remembering correctly, at the end of the things I say, we get the thing that she says in reverse.
Yes.
And then
we get this
echo from earlier on in the song. So I'm not sure, exactly how to fit that into this analysis either, although I did have sort of a theory/thought that in this song, maybe she comes to grips a little bit with some kind of idea of, if not time travel, then like, well, maybe we'll get into it. I don't know. But that maybe our narrator is sort of coming to a place of acceptance in a way that that might sort of enable the time moves both ways kind of mindset. I'm not sure. I feel like I need to wait to comment on that because I need to gather my thoughts a little bit more. But
I think I see what you mean, though, that like instead of pushing against a specific expectation, by kind of accepting that, you're able to more easily flow between two states, and that might like enable the time traveliness a little bit more because you're not actively working against anything.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not sure exactly how that gets fleshed out throughout the song, but we'll keep it in mind and I'll come back to it if I can remember in my research coming up. Because there's still a ton of research that both of us have to do on the song.
Okay. One more thing. Christopher Laws did do an album review for the entire album. And here's a little snippet of the things that they wrote about Divers. Divers provides the fullest expression of another of the album's motifs, the agonizing divide between men and women, or just as much between the realms conventionally apportioned to the two genders. The narrator here can never be sure between love and deception. Given a jewel that seems twice as valuable as her life, convention also dictates that she stay stranded with the women on the pier as she watches her lover phosphoresce into the ocean. The strain of enduring separation can be overwhelming, and in some of the most forceful lines on Divers, crying out in pain and self-affirmation, the narrator exclaims, "A woman is alive, a woman is alive. You do not take her for a sign and naked her on a stone, alone, unfastened and fine." As with the painted over artworks of Sappaconnigan, women may be cast aside by the male memory, but witness and felt experience lingers.
Christopher Laws, I wish you would write more. I do.
What's up with Christopher Laws?
No, but that's really cool. And I think that that's right. I think that there is, I mean, as we've already touched on a little bit, I think gender is a huge part of the song, which also makes it really fun for us to talk about. We love harping on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Should we get into that YouTube video?
Oh, sure. Yes, please. Okay. So I'm sure you'll include it in the notes, but can you give me the title just so I can look at the image of it?
Yes. Yes. I would just look up on YouTube Critical Reactions. That's the name of this person's channel, Critical Reactions, and then Divers, I think. Okay. So he's done one on Divers, which is the one we're going to be talking about, obviously, one on Anecdotes, and one on Only Skin, which I thought maybe we could listen to for a bonus episode and, like, comment on it, because that, like, and by the way, I think I said this before, but he's a composer, and so his understanding of, like, techniques that she's using is super impressive and super helpful for people like us.
We did get, like, and this is ages ago, I think this is like Monkey and Bear recording sessions, where someone named Ari had written in and gave us, I think even made a video and gave us like a beautiful explanation of everything that was happening musically in one of those very early songs that we covered. So thanks again, Ari. We're just picking up with Critical Reactions where we left off multiple albums ago.
Yeah. All right. So, did you find the video?
Yes, I'm just looking at his stilled face here.
Okay, so yeah, I will link to that in the show notes, as well as the Blessing All the Birds articles, all three of them, because they're all worth checking out. Highly recommend checking out this video. I pulled the parts that I took to be most interesting, but it's so worth watching the whole thing as well, because there's a ton of stuff that he says that obviously I can't get into. It's a 40, I think, minute long video.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like,
you know what? It's not just us making ridiculously long episodes about the music. It's just part of the deal.
It's just part of the deal. And part of the beauty of it is that it was his first time listening to it. So he's not even a person approaching this interpretation / analysis with this fucking obsession with her music. He's like, no, I'm just listening to it for the first time and have 40 minutes of shit to say, because it's so
That's so cool. Complex. 7 minutes to 40 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So at the very beginning, as he's listening to it, he makes this rising and falling motion with his hand that sort of mirrors what the harp is doing. And he describes it as this like ascension and descension, this diving swell, which already I was like, that movement of the harp is being, is mirroring like the movement we've seen throughout the whole album so far of the falling from the sky and then they're rising back up to the sky. And I love that this song is just like this fucking hyper imagining of that kind of movement that we've been talking about this whole time.
I love that he picked up on that so quickly.
Me too. And then he said the main piano motif is also about diving and rising. There's like this swell happening that I don't know if I would have gotten without listening to him. So he also, throughout the whole thing, even as he gets to the end of the song, even after reflecting back on it, he was like, I I'm having trouble trying to get a read on the emotion of this song, which I thought was really interesting for a couple of reasons. Like he's primarily focused on like the musicality of it. And he gets into this at the end of his video, but he is sort of fascinated at the idea that she can be so obscure about the emotion. He's like, you kind of get a melancholic vibe, but also like there's these bright, twinkly, happy notes happening throughout. And so it's not pure melancholy and it's not pure optimism and it's not like pure wistfulness, although maybe that's there too. And so he picked up on this idea that she's being kind of obscure, like right from the get-go.
And I think he's probably right that it's all of those things. It is melancholic and it's optimistic and it's wistful and it's like desperate and it's angry and it's all of those things.
Yeah.
And totally. I think it's probably mirrored in the waves of the music too, right? Like when we get to The Woman Is Alive, there is so much strength in that. Yes. And it's big and it's heavy. And I think, I mean, everything's intentional, but there's real big feelings there for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that part specifically because I think that there is such a beautiful tension. And, you know, like on our list, we had keep in mind like the tension, the ways in which things pull against each other.
Yes,
throughout the
opposing
album.
Forces. Yeah.
Opposing. Yeah, exactly. And I think that in that very moment, the Woman Is Alive moment, you get this like triumph of like a woman is alive. It's this powerful thing, as you were saying. And there's also this like opposing sort of contrapoint. I'm using that word because the guy in this video uses that word about the musicality. But this like opposing force that is also like so fucking sad and depleted and without hope. Like this cry to notice that there's a woman alive. So it's both triumphant and deflated at the same time.
And I so get that because it's like we shouldn't have to note that a woman is alive.
Right.
It shouldn't have to be said.
Right.
It exactly. shouldn't have to be said in such plain terms. That is an obvious thing. Being alive denotes that you deserve all of these things, that you require all of these things. But at that point, it's like, at least from this very simple interpretation, however many minutes we've been recording, it's just like, why do I have to say this? Like,
yeah, like a woman is alive. That means there's agency here. Like I have agency. It's like, recognize my agency.
Yeah. Don't leave me on this, like, why am I on this, only on this arid shore, which I have a lot of feelings about the arid shore.
Okay, we'll get into it for sure. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So many feelings about this entire fucking song.
Oh my God.
One of the things that I thought was super interesting about the rising and falling music stuff that he's been talking about is that he describes this – I'm not going to do an adequate job. So again, just go watch the video. But he describes the first half of the song. He's like, there's this, I'm going to use the term simple, but like simple for Joanna, like for the context of the song, which is already not simple. So take that with a grain of salt. But this simple rising and falling, and the piano is in line with that, the harps rising and falling, and it sort of like swells and de-swells together. Also, as I'm making that movement with my hand too, it sort of is reminiscent of like breathing, like this like swelling and deflating. But then he says, things change though. That theme does not maintain for the whole song. In the second half of the song, he describes what happens as this opposing force. So as one instrument is rising and then descending, another instrument is doing the opposite in that it's descending and then rising. And so they're literally doing these like opposite things and then coming together and then splitting up and then coming together again, which is so cool in the context of this song. And she's talking about infinite divides between potentially men and women, or at least like her partner and herself. And then also just the twinning theme that we're going to talk about ceaselessly in these next few episodes. I thought that was super, super cool. And he described the effect that has as creating this sort of spiraling sensation. So this like spiraling, like infinite feeling, because it's hard to place yourself and it feels like you're just going in this circle that just never quite resolves. You're always falling and you're always ascending is like the result of having these things happening simultaneously, which mm-hmm. again, obviously circles and cycles and spiraling and infinity. I'm going to glow.
And you really feel that in the second half of the song too, right? Like yeah. you're really just kind of like bumbling all over the place, like unsure, yes. at least when I listen, that's what I feel.
Yeah.
So cool.
And then interestingly, and I don't know what to make of this, and he didn't know what to make of this either, but interestingly, he describes like the last quarter of the song as abandoning that rising and falling motif altogether in favor of what he describes as the twinkle phase of the song. And so he says the twinkle phase is more like the music chooses one note to kind of bounce around. And so there's like one note that like all the other notes are sort of circling around, bouncing around, which creates this sort of like twinkling effect. And he's like, I don't know what that means. He's like, I don't know if that means like she was like stumbling and trying to like find her place before. And then at the end of the song, she's like closer to having found a place. He's like, I really don't know. But he's like, that's what I hear musically, at least.
That makes me think of when we were talking about like our partners in Waltz trying to find each other through these multi dimensions of space and like all of the different coordinates that you could try and find someone. And even if you gave them the exact coordinates for a place and a time, that maybe you're circling around the dimension because you're not quite finding them because you never really can.
Yeah,
you've almost got each other, but it's also that like doppelganger, that twinning and that duality that it's like, is this even like the original person I was looking for, or is this like very cool?
Super cool. Okay. And so then the other like main takeaway that I wanted to bring up about this guy's video, even though like I could talk about this guy's video for hours, I feel like, but you guys should just go watch it on your own. I'll make one last point though. So the other main thing I wanted to bring up was that he was like, a really standout part musically is that there's never any fucking resolution in this song. So he was like, she does this over and over and over again, where musically you're waiting for a resolution. And from what I understand, when we speak about resolution in terms of music, it's that like we've just been primed culturally with like the kind of music, the way that music tends to go is that like we're waiting for like a certain note within the same key to like end like a verse or like a section or a part of music. And our ears are just like naturally sort of waiting for that like nice sounding ending to some sort of musical part. And what this guy was saying was that like she never gives that to you within this whole song. So she creates this tension from having these like parts that almost resolve but then like go on to the next thing. And so he kept commenting on that. He was like, she's like one note away, two tops from giving us this resolution, but never gets there. And she ends the song without having resolved the melody, which gives this like influx kind of vibe. It gives this like things aren't done kind of vibe.
And that makes a lot of sense to me. It makes sense that all of these big ideas wouldn't be concluded in such like a pretty way, that there's no like metaphorical bow we can tie on any of these issues, because they're not so simple. Relationships are not this simple. Life is not this simple. Like it just, that's too simple a conclusion for her and for us, for all of us.
100%. I love that interpretation. I love the idea that it's her rejecting the putting the bow on, like, this is not like a statement, a clean cut, like,
it can't be.
It's messy. Yeah. It's just like it makes me think that rather than it being like this like clean thesis statement that we can easily recap in like a sentence or so. It's like rather a vibe that she's giving us. It's like a peek into the life of this person without there being like a, and here's the moral of the story, you know? There's no moral. It's a vibe.
It's a vibe and it's an endless cycle, right? Like no matter how much time throughout this album we've spent thinking about and talking.
Lots of time talking.
We've just talkled and talkled. I swear I'm halfway through my coffee now, guys. It's just... we spent a lot of time talking about all of these big ideas. And the idea that she could wrap everything up really nicely and present it to us with a solution is absurd.
It's like, absurd. Yeah.
Yeah. These things are too big. And if she did, then she would run the world, right? She would have all of the answers. She would be God. She would be the omniscient presence that like rules all of us with a firm but gentle hand.
I mean, she is that for me, but like, I get it. I get what you're saying. yeah, totally. And it could also be too like a comment that like our lives don't end that way either. Our lives don't get resolved. Like each individual 100%. Life just fucking ends and then the next one begins. Like there is no clean storybook ending.
No, and that's just the messiness of being a human, right? Yeah. That like, and I was like, is it easier or harder that way? Is it like, I think it would be harder to resolve everything. It might be more satisfying, but like, what does resolve really mean?
Yeah, that's the thing. What does resolve really mean? Yeah, I think the best way of describing what I'm thinking of is the bow metaphor that you used. And like, we just don't get that in life in diverse. another interesting thing I thought he said was that she puts a bunch of emotional red herrings, or what he calls emotional red herrings, throughout the song. He's like, I kind of already touched on this, but he was like, she makes you think it's going to be happy and then it's not. Or like if she's singing a part with a like happier sounding melody, like the words that she's saying are really heavy. And then like vice versa, if she's, if it's a little heavier sounding, then like maybe it's on a more optimistic lyrical note. And so he was like, I just don't know where to go with the emotions. But he thought that it was purposeful. Like, whatever she's doing, it's purposeful. And then I was like, yes, man. I agree.
Yeah. And then all of this is just messy.
Yes. Like,
yeah.
And then he also commented on how there's kind of a weird dynamic to the flow. And what he meant by that was, like, the moderation that she uses is not what you would expect in terms of like when to accent certain phrases or words, either with music or with the volume of what she's saying. So to say like, I'm going to accent this word because of the volume or like whatever, he says that she does that in like really unexpected ways, in ways that you wouldn't anticipate. And he thinks that that helps to sort of, first, like, make the listener feel sort of off kilter, like a little bit thrown about, like a little bit not securely in one place, but then also to obscure again the emotions of the song. Like he thinks that that adds to the confusion that we sort of feel. Oh, and he said that it might allude to discomfort, which I thought was interesting. That it alludes to discomfort. He said it kind of feels stilted in a purposeful way, like someone who is really good at being themselves and not really good at being someone else, which made me think of like gender roles. But if a person has to like put on this mask, put on this role, put on this hat, that maybe they'd feel stilted in so doing.
One of the things that one of the Blessing All the Birds articles brings up, and I think it's delving into Divers, the title song, it's like the conversation between Rachel and Melissa, are some of the connections to Colleen. Colleen is one of my very favorite songs that we talked about because so much of it was about the myth of the Selkie. And that's a zillion percent what you're just talking about, right? That if you remember, the myth of the Selkie was like this mythical seal creature. If a man could capture her skin, then she was forced to remain on land. And she had to like sneakily steal back her skin to be able to be free. And sometimes she had to leave her kids on shore or whatever. But yeah, being uncomfortable in your own skin, Selkie.
It's total Selkie. And like such another, like, the water-based songs.
Yes.
And the comparison between them. Yeah. One of the Blessing All the Birds articles is a straight up comparison between Occident and divers, because both we have these like women waiting on the shore being scared of masted ships coming towards them, like grappling with like kin and love and all sorts of shit, death. I love that. I love that comparison to Colleen, another super watery song. And
super watery.
And inextricably linked to this, the roles that we play.
Yeah.
Okay. Almost done my notes here.
No rush. So, I love this.
Okay. Yay. So he noted that the piano and the harp often double up together, which I thought of twinning, made me think of twinning. Interestingly too, he said there's never a perfect loop. So musically speaking, he said that like you would expect there to just be this. So like you go through the loop of like ascension and descension. And then he's like, you would expect that to exactly repeat over and over, like not just with one instrument, but like the whole musical sound taken together. And you'd expect that to just loop over and over. And he's like, one thing I love about Joanna here, but also in the other songs that I've listened to from her, is that she never gives you a perfect loop. So something always changes. And like what you would expect to hear, she doesn't quite deliver. She like changes something musically each loop, which like this might be a stretch. But if you're thinking about like lives as cycles and like the different lives that we go through, like the details of it might look different, but this like general structure remains the same. I don't know. I don't know how intentional that was.
Well, if we're thinking about this, this song is from like the perspective of a woman, that like that's what connects us all, right? Is that general structure. And then there's those little blips and bloops along the way that differentiate our lives, but that there is that general shared experience that exists and that repeats.
Yeah. Totally. 100% agree. Especially too, if we use like the filter of the super narrator on it too, that like she can see that this is like what women like are bound to do, or like the experience that is inherent in a lot of women's lives. And by inherent, I don't mean like necessary, just that like it shapes a lot of women's lives throughout history, and that those dynamics keep repeating themselves.
Yes.
Okay. The last thing I'll say about this video, even though, yeah, go watch it, because there's a ton more that he says that's super interesting, but
I will.
But it like made me laugh out loud, because he was like wrapping up the video. He was like, okay guys, like thanks so much for listening, that's my take on Diver. And then he like looks at his screen and he was like, Divers. He was like, what? He's like, guys, I'm gonna need your help on this. Like he was already feeling lost, but then he realized that the title wasn't Diver, it was Divers plural. And he's like, he threw his hands up basically. He's like, I don't fucking know. Like, help.
And that's such an interesting point though, considering all of the like almost missed connections in the melodies of the different instruments, right? That we have more than one diver following this pattern. And like sometimes they almost meet, but they don't. And then like I'm doing all kinds of weird things with my arms just for Nikki here. But that's so cool.
Yes. Yeah. And it also speaks to the thing that we were just talking about with this, like, this experience of this one experience, at least, of femininity and the way that that repeats, like, it's not, and masculinity, right? Like, it's, we're not just talking about these two people's particular experience. We're talking about this, like, theme that can mm-hmm. be found over and over and over again throughout history, and that keeps repeating itself, where, like, there's different kinds of diving happening, maybe. I don't know. We'll get into it. But anyways, that was the video. I thought it was super cool. Thanks so much to that guy for talking about Jenna Newsom. I feel like she so deserves that, and we appreciate that analysis very much.
Oh, you can special request songs.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so someone requested Divers, so thank you to the person who did that.
What should we request?
Oh, my God. Well, Only Skin's been done. I am curious about Have One On Me, like the title track for that.
Mm-hmm.
I
would Someone in the comments is talking about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be very curious for Have One On Me. Sapokonikin, I'd be curious about too. I mean, literally anything.
Can you just do everything? When we run out of content, that's what we'll do. We'll just request every song one by one, and then we'll just talk.
Okay.
So cool. So again, that guy is Critical Reactions on YouTube.
Yes. Yeah. We'll link to him in the show notes, but Brian. Check him out. And
he has a Discord server. I'm going to join his Discord and see what they're talking about there.
He really talks about, I don't know. He just approaches the interpretation in this very non-pretentious way and explains these complicated musical concepts that a total noob like me would never understand were it not for his very accessible explanations, but still gives you this feeling of complexity to it. And one of my favorite things in the world is watching this guy who's just he's not a fan of Joanna in the sense that he's not obsessed with her in the way that anybody listening to this podcast probably is. But to hear him still be wow, this is incredible is so satisfying, because it's just, I don't know, watching somebody else be super impressed with her musically is really satisfying to me.
Very cool. Okay. Sorry, I'm just scrolling his Discord now. Looking for other things.
So I had a couple other preliminary notes before we actually talk about lyrics, but it's mostly
amazing.
It's mostly being blessing all the birds is amazing, and you need to go read that. Not you, Sam, because I know you have, but audience people, mm-hmm. go read all of their mm-hmm. shit. It's so good.
You can also listen, as I was looking through Blessing All the Birds website, we did a collaborative episode with Melissa from Blessing All the Birds. It's our Colleen series.
Yeah.
So to just refresh your memory, go listen to our Colleen episode and then listen to the piece that Melissa wrote, which is called Divers, Colleen, and Monkey and Bear, a collaboration with Hopeless Endeavor podcast.
Oh, that was so fun. And we were so lucky to get to do that with her. So definitely go check that out. Okay. So another one of, I mentioned that there were three Blessing All the Birds articles, at least, on the song Divers. One of the three is a part of this chiasmus. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but C-H-I-A-S-M-U-S series, this chiasmus series that they did on a bunch of the songs on Divers. So in case anybody is like me and didn't know what chiasmus was / is, I have a little definition here before I just touch on some of the most, the parts that I thought were most interesting about that one article. So a chiasmus is a rhetorical or literary figure in which words, grammatical constructions, or concepts are repeated in reverse order in the same or a modified form. So there's this mirroring effect kind of. And the example that this definition gives is the repetition of the words best and happiest in the following sentence. So poetry is the record of the best and happiest moments of the happiest and best minds. So it's like mirrored in that like happiest comes last in the first time that we say the two words, and then it comes first. So it's like literally like reflected. But the literary device can be used like I had said in concepts being repeated in that way. And so this like mirroring effect of concepts and themes and movement for this album.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Blessing All the Birds did this whole series where they compare, they use The Things I Say as the middle song in the album, and then use the songs that fall on either side of The Things I Say, like getting further and further out until we're contrasting anecdotes with Time as a Symptom. And they contrast each pair of songs in that way. And really, really coolly, there are these themes that don't feel accidental. Like it feels like Joanna intentionally constructed the album to have this chiasmus effect. And so, yeah, fucking fascinating. I find it like just endlessly fascinating that she could have had that construction in mind. And it gives me super narrator questions. So for this, then, the two songs that fall closest to The Things I Say on either side of The Things I Say are Waltz of the 101st Lightborn and Divers. And so the article compares the themes of the two of those songs. And just a couple standout parts that I wanted to mention. So in the two of those songs, Melissa writes that the similarities are prominent at first glance. Both songs are very conscious of the enforcement of gender roles, borders, twinning, repeating narratives, and how we remember how we are commemorated and by whom. So the two female narrators are left on the earth, one of the four traditional elements, at important borders or great divides, to use the words of Waltz, that men have already traversed to seek knowledge and or to gain power. The narrator in Waltz is left on one version of planet Earth in the multiverse as men ascend through the air, able to control both time and space. Unable to cross those borders herself, she stays put and tells us, the listeners, what happened to them. And the narrator in Divers watches on the pier as the male diver descends into the water, contemplating crossing the line between land and sea herself, frustrated by what is expected of her as a woman. In Waltz, the narrator reports on how the soldiers are at war with themselves and their ghosts, and the diver's narrator knows that she is just one iteration of a woman on the shore, oppressed by gendered expectations. Both narrators will witness what they witness in the song again and again: the destruction of Earth, the diver seeking pearls. In both songs, there is an emphasis on interconnected, repeating cycles of time and experience. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Can you repeat that last sentence again?
Yes.
In each song, there is...
In both songs, there is an emphasis on interconnected, repeating cycles of time and experience. Which is so cool, because, like, we talked about in Waltz how there's the, like, this timeless slash, like, forever repeating fate that women are subjected to, where they have to stay put and watch their male lover go out and fight a fucking war while they're stuck on land, not knowing what has happened to their person, and like having to like be patient and wait and wait and wait until the men go out and finish their conquering and colonizing. And so we get that sort of vibe in Divers too, right? Where there's the woman just like waiting for the man to like finish his bullshit.
And finish his bullshit knowing what the end result will be too, right? Like knowing what violence and what awfulness is going to repeat again and again and again. Like having that memory, having that recollection of this happening.
Yes.
Repeatedly.
So this is me now just speculating based on you're touching on memory and like comparing the two ways that that theme is represented in each song. Like in Waltz, I sort of get the vibe that like she, the narrator, wants her lover to come home. Like she's like, Highlands away, my John. Like, where are you? And she like remembers the we talked about this on Waltz, but like we don't know how exactly, but she like remembers the falling of like the various bridges. And like she has this like deep knowledge where she's like, yeah, I know that this is going to go poorly. Like just come home and stop your fucking conquering. Mm-hmm. Whereas on Divers, it's harder for me to read the vibe of that. Like I am not clear on whether she wants the diver to stop diving or whether she wants to engage in the diving herself. Like rather than Divers being a call home to the narrator, Melissa, at least on Blessing All the Birds, thinks that it's more of a, or she like many times describes the narrator as wanting to go out and being able to do the diving with him and like seek the knowledge. And so there might be that opposing force too, where there's like a different thing that the woman wants in each song. I'm not sure. I don't know if I have the same take on Divers. I might though. That does sound right in a certain way to me. But yeah. I just thought I would comment on that potential source of opposition and duality.
I think that you're right, though, that like, and that Melissa is right here, too, that the ending of Waltz is very much like a longing. And here it feels more like a, I don't even know how to describe it. Like our last verses are.
I'm so sorry. I think I need to answer this because it's a package for my green
card. Yeah. Go.
Okay, so I believe when my dog so rudely interrupted us, you were talking about, well, it seems like none of us can remember. So sorry for that interruption in thought. I hope you guys could infer what Sam was in the middle of saying. You don't remember at all? Yeah. Sam shook her head.
The last note that I read in that I wrote in my notes as I had scrolled down to "and never will I wed," and then I typed, "Is this why she hated the song being called the Diver's Wife?"
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, moving on then.
Anyway.
I think that might be it for preliminary notes. Only an hour. Thought it would be more. Unless you have other stuff, Sam.
I don't think I have other stuff.
Okay.
Thank you so much for listening to the first part of our Divers series. Note, it is not called The Diver's Wife. It is called Divers. What are we going to say? We're going to say, please send us your thoughts and theories and feelings, be they big or small. We would love to get them. You can do that either by sending us an email at ahopelessendeavor@gmail.com. You can send us a DM on Instagram. Our Instagram is ahopelessendeavorpodcast. That would be really nice. We also have Facebook, which is ahopelessendeavor, a Joanna Newsom podcast. If you're not in the group, come hang out with us there. It's fun. We talk about things sometimes. Nikki runs our Patreon, which is full of goodies.
It's full of goodies. We have early episode releases and we have bonus episodes right now as we record this. There are 21 posted, so you should go check that out. I will link to that in the show notes, but also I think it's just patreon.com/ahopelessendeavor.
You can also rate and review us.
You could also rate and review us. We love hearing what you guys have to say and just interaction in general. Okay.
Also, if you know anything about the number 7.
Oh, yes.
Tell us.
Tell us about 7.
Please.
Tell us about all sorts of it. Okay. Yeah.
Till next time. Okay, that's it. Bye.